welcome to the Ordinary People's Theatre. I'm your host, Emma Sheehan. Sit back and relax with my short stories, mini soaps, and the odd classic tale and something mysterious thrown in for good measure, all with a dark comic twist. I upload here on the first Monday of the month. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to my website, emmasheehan.co.uk, or find me on Instagram at emmasheehanlondon or Twitter at TheRealEmSheehan. And if you want to hear more episodes or find out more about the show, I'm on ordinarypeoplestheatre.buzzsprout.com. Enjoy the show. Big Brown Boot by Emma Sheehan. Checking for the second time that he had double-locked his front door, Nathan Reed only went a few steps down his path when he saw it and took two steps back. Who put that there? That wasn't there when he opened the curtains this morning, was it? No, he was sure it wasn't. But it was there now, resting with impunity on his low garden wall, a big brown boot. Of all the liberties, who put that there? How dare they? How dare someone put a boot on his wall? How dare someone walk down his street and choose his wall to discard a lone, filthy, big brown boot? Still holding his keys, he loped one around the lace of the boot, walked it to the wheelie bin and let it go with a thud. He then walked to his car and sat, gripping the steering wheel and looking at the wheelie bin. He cursed inwardly as he realised he should have put in someone else's bin, as the next collection was in 5 days' time, and he knew the presence of the boot would be on his mind until then. He wondered if he should sneak back and replace it in a neighbour's bin, but realised that wouldn't look very good. Perhaps he could do it tonight, under the cover of darkness. Still unsettled, he started his 20-minute journey to work. Traffic was building up, snaking towards the roundabout by the science park. Getting a bit annoyed, Nathan decided to do his usual trick of joining the shorter queue that was turning right on the roundabout, then going all the way round to beat the plebs who were patiently queuing to turn left. The plan was going full steam ahead, but just as he was about to enter the roundabout, his eye was caught by an object on the grass in front of him. A big brown boot. The shock caused him to slam the brakes on, and he received the rebuke of a couple of car horns. Pulling himself together, he began to make the first of three full circuits around the roundabout. The first one to check his eyes weren't deceiving him, the second to check his imagination wasn't playing tricks on him, and the third to triple check that this appeared to be a twin of the big brown boot that was sitting on his garden wall this morning. Snapping out of it, his mouth dry and his hands trembling, Nathan continued on the few hundred yards to the firm's car park. Turning off the engine, he took a moment to gather his thoughts. It was probably just a stupid coincidence, wasn't it? Not one, but two big brown boots on his way to work. Weird. His flow was interrupted by an overloud knock on his window. Exiting the car, he was clapped on the back by Jim Razzle. "All right, mate, what's in there for? You look like you've seen a ghost," said Jim. "I'm not. I was just sitting there. I've only just pulled up," replied Nathan. "I spotted you from the window. Come down when you didn't get out of the car. I was coming to check you were still breathing. I thought you keeled over. Your face was looking all weird and bent out of shape," laughed Jim. "Bent out of shape? Who's bent out of shape?" Nathan bristled. "You, mate. You look proper strange. Did you sleep all right?" "Oh, you haven't been up all night on your true crime blog, whatnot, have you?" Jim laughed again. "I was on a deadline. But what's that got to do with anything?" "You know what you're like, mate, getting all obsessed." "No, I'm not," said Nathan. "I'm just dedicated, Jim. I'm a very big noise in the true crime world. I have to get my blog out on time. People rely on it. People rely on me."
"People rely on you? What people? What they rely on you for?" Jim sneered.
"To be a voice, Jim. There are millions of unsolved crimes. I'm just one little guy trying to solve a couple. And yes, mock away, but people do look up to me."
"Why? Why the bloody hell would anyone look up to you, mate? What's your clear-up rate?
I'm not the police, Jim. I don't have a clear-up rate. But the police have no ideas, obviously. Or else there wouldn't be any unsolved cases, would there? Nathan said the last part over his shoulder as he started to make his way into the office, as something had just occurred to him. He took the steps as Jim, grinning, walking slowly behind him, waited for the lift. Nathan hurriedly hung his coat up and switched on his computer, not even bothering to stow his packed lunch in the fridge where it should be. His stupid manager, Reg Murray, wasn't around by the looks of things, so Nathan clicked onto Case File, one of the best and most comprehensive true crime blogs, and began to type in the search bar when he was rudely interrupted.
"Morning, Jim. You got that donut you owe me?"
Nathan sighed and turned around. "Good morning, Lana. No donuts here. I'm a donut-free zone."
"Oh, sorry. I thought you were Jim.
You two are getting really creepy now. You're turning into twins."
The woman walked off laughing and shouted across at Jim, who was at his desk now with a stupid grin on his face. "Turning into twins," thought Nathan. "Stupid bloody woman." Okay, he and Jim looked a bit alike. Well, that's going a bit far. He turned and looked at Jim, who was just putting a pair of glasses on. Nathan decided it was a good time to put his lunch in the fridge, and he stopped by Jim's desk. "New glasses, Jim? Since when?"
"Oh, I've had them a few days now, mate. What do you reckon? Make me look a bit brainier."
"Figure it'd get all the ladies flocking in, if I'm looking all intellectual and that."
"They're the same as mine, aren't they?" Nathan frowned and peered into Jim's face.
"All the same colour, maybe," replied Jim.
"Same everything. They are the exact same spectacles as mine, Jim." Nathan heard himself getting all what his wife called prickly.
"All right, Nate, take a chill pill. What can I say? You're such an inspiration, mate. You're like Gok Won or something, aren't you?"
Jim threw back his head and laughed. "Just wondered why you've got the same specs as me, Jim. Especially since you got the same leather jacket as me, shaved off your goatee about a week after me."
Jim looked around the office. "Are you for real, mate? You winding me up, yeah?"
Jim's smile dropped a bit. "I just picked up some glasses that were all the rage down Specsavers. We shop in the same mall. I'm not sure what you're getting at here, mate."
"Lana may be right. It is getting creepy," said Nathan. Jim sighed.
"Can I be honest with you, Nate? I'm getting a bit worried about you. Do you think you're taking all this a bit far? You're up nearly all night reading them true crime things, and now you're writing one. I think you're getting paranoid, imagining things. You're focusing too much on the dark side.
Lighten up. Give it a rest."
"Imagining things?" said Nathan. "No, I'm not. I am definitely not imagining you have the same clothes, haircut and now specs as me, Jim."
"You are losing your mind, fella. We both just got normal 2023 gear on. Who the bloody hell would be modelling themselves on you? Some creepy Sherlock Holmes type bloke skulking around with a Tupperware lunchbox."
Jim turned his attention back to his computer and began clicking around. And Nathan walked off to the kitchen, fuming, and placed his lunch in the fridge.
What idiot wouldn't want to be compared to Sherlock Holmes, and what fool wouldn't have a lunchbox, he fumed. Shutting the fridge door, he stopped to look out of the kitchen window, down into the car park below. And he spotted Jim's car next to his, and remembered he'd forgotten to be annoyed about Jim getting exactly the same colour and model of car as him, a silver Volvo. Charming, his best mate calling him paranoid. And just what the hell was he on about? Reckoning the ladies would be falling at his feet now he was wearing glasses. The donut-eating moron.
After settling back at his desk, Nathan clicked back onto Case File and entered Brown Boot into the search bar. And there it was. The Lewis Dolan case. Lewis Dolan was a missing man, later found buried in the garden of a work colleague, Peter Simpkins. The killer had removed one of Lewis's large brown boots and placed it on the garden wall of his parents' house and one outside the garage where he and Simpkins worked. Police later found out the boots had been worn by someone else, other than Lewis, and that someone had stood in the flower bed outside his house as if peering in through the window. Nathan clicked off. Suddenly, he felt an icy chill go up his spine.
He'd made a cursory look at this case a couple of weeks ago in connection with a case perpetrated by a foot fetish kidnapper, but hadn't read all the details until now. Curious. Pushing back his chair, he walked with speed to the toilets as a sickening feeling was coming up. In the end, he didn't vomit, but he splashed some cold water on his face and stood for a few moments looking at his own reflection in the speckly mirror. His eyes were a bit bloodshot and he had large, dark circles underneath his puffy face. Perhaps Jim was right. Perhaps he was focusing too much on the blog. Perhaps he was becoming paranoid. Maybe he was seeing things. Maybe he was taking it all too much to heart. Okay, so some idiot was dumping old boots around the place. Plenty of fly tipping going on round here. Pulling himself together, he walked slowly back, and as he entered the office, he saw that Jim was standing up, leaning over his computer. Quickening his pace, he stole silently and peered over Jim's shoulder. Help you with something, mate? Jim jumped. Me, mate? Nah, I was trying to help you out. Murray's on the prowl, and I noticed you had this true crime page open, so I was trying to close it down before he got wind that you're just chilling and lazing about on your blog.
Oh, you just happened to notice, did you, Jim? What, from four desks down?
Are you spying on me, Jim? Nathan snorted.
Am I what? This is getting ridiculous, Nathan. I was actually passing because I brought you this.
He picked up a little napkin from the desk and held out a large sugary donut with a smear of raspberry jam oozing from one side.
Oh, thanks, mate, said Nathan, feeling a fool.
This is what I mean. You're all uptight every time you read this thing. You've got to take a break from it all, mate.
Can't you look at something that's more like... well, like more of a laugh sort of thing, said Jim.
More of a laugh sort of thing?
No, it's very serious, and I'm not... what was it you said? Chilling and lazing around on my blog? This is serious stuff.
I can't make you understand, Jim, but it's not just a hobby, you know. This is something I hope to build into a full-time thing eventually.
What, some of these crimes?
Well, that would be great, obviously, but I meant doing the blog. I'm thinking of starting a podcast.
Oh, very modern, I'm sure.
Look, don't you think it's all a bit, well...
Jim stopped and gazed into the distance.
A bit what? Nathan replied.
And Jim waited a few moments before he spoke again.
A bit dangerous.
Dangerous? What do you mean dangerous? How can it be dangerous? In what way?
Nathan spluttered, his voice rising. A slight knot of something in the pit of his stomach.
I don't know. What's that phrase? Look into the abyss and the abyss starts looking back at you.
What? Said Nathan quietly.
Well, if one of these serial killers gets wind of your blog, I'll start tuning into your podcast, whatnot and that.
What? What do you mean? Said Nathan. The stomach pit grew deeper.
What I mean is, what if they think you're getting too close to the truth? They might track you down, maybe silence you, said Jim, warming to his theme.
Have you lost your mind, Jim? There are thousands of true crime bloggers. I don't think any of them have come to any harm so far, Nathan smiled.
Really? How do you know?
I think you should have a look. I'll bet there are one or two of these bloggy podcasters who only did a few episodes, then bang, they suddenly stopped.
You got to ask yourself why.
Why? Said Nathan.
Why? Because they've probably been done in, mate, said Jim.
This is total rubbish. Nathan was interrupted.
Is it, though? Think about it.
You reckoned you're good enough to take this full time. You could be making yourself a target.
I reckon you should pack this all in, fella. Get away down that caravan of yours with the missus for the weekend.
Jim abruptly turned and walked back to his desk, where he remained all day. He took his new glasses off every now and again as they were getting on his nerves and he didn't really need them. Nathan noticed him sloping off 10 minutes before the official time, but couldn't be bothered to wave. Nathan switched off case file after Jim's ridiculous outburst and did some real work for the rest of the day. Back behind the wheel at 5 o'clock, he drove slowly, his heart in his mouth at the roundabout. Circling twice, he broke out into the first smile of the day as the big brown boot was now gone from the roundabout. About 20 minutes later, 2 streets away from his home, Nathan was turning his silver Volvo right into Garden Avenue when he noticed a silver Volvo turning left from the road. Nathan caught himself and thought for a joke, well, maybe it's Jim. Perhaps he's going to be moving into Miss Street next. Sitting in the car, doing a few deep breaths, Nathan finally let go of the steering wheel, his shoulders in knots, and walked as casually as he could up the garden path. He stopped by the wheelie bin and quickly lifted the lid. He put it down again and then lifted it up again, just to make sure it wasn't a trick of the light. Taking out his phone, he clicked on the torch app and looked into the bin once more. The few bits of litter and the small bag he had slung the big brown boot on top of were still there. But the boot was gone. He opened the recycling bin just to double check, knowing full well the boot wouldn't be there either. He opened, but had not yet closed the front door when his wife, Tammy, called out from the front room. "Why are you sitting in the car like that? You all right? You looked a bit weird," she said. "No, I wasn't." He walked into the room. "I came straight in. I look fine, thanks," Nathan bristled. "What were you putting in the bin? Don't go putting non-recyclable stuff in the wrong bin." "Nothing. I haven't put anything in the bin," he replied. "I heard the bin open, so I looked out of the window and saw you rifling through," Tammy said. "Rifling? I wasn't rifling," Nathan snapped. "Well, what were you putting in the bin?" she went on. "Can you stop going on about it, woman? I merely glanced into the bin as I couldn't remember what day it was, and I wondered if the bins needed to go out. That was all." "All right, Nate, don't start getting all prickly," she said to Nathan's back as he huffily marched out of the room and began climbing the stairs. He stopped midway as Tammy, now shouting, said, "Oh, yeah, and what's with all this trampling about in the flower beds? Was that you too? Or was that not you, just like that wasn't you not looking in the bin?" Turning and plunging down the stairs 2 at a time, Nathan pulled open the front door and went to the flower bed underneath the window. And there they were, 2 large footprints underneath his window in the dirt. 2 footprints that looked like they were left by some very large boots. Tammy shouted something again as he came back in slowly and began to mount the stairs. But he wasn't listening to her, so just replied he'd have a quick shower and then be down for dinner. And entering his small home office, he sat and slumped with his head in his hands. Was this what they called, not a coincidence, something more than that? Synchronicity. That was it. Events or occurrences that appear connected or meaningful but aren't connected at all. Could it be a case of that? He had investigated the Lewis Dolan case casually. Then, after the boots appeared, he refreshed himself on the details and since then, the footprints in the flower beds. What the hell was going on? Was he going crazy? Was all this just some giant hilarious coincidence? Well, it must be. Slowly, he opened his laptop and logged back into case file and took up where he'd left off this morning before he'd rushed to the toilet at work. So, Lewis Dolan had been found buried in a colleague's garden. A skinny youth named Peter Simpkins. Reading on, he discovered that Simpkins had protested his innocence and, apart from Dolan being in his garden, there was no other evidence. His legal team had some grainy doorbell footage from a neighbour of a small van driving with no lights into the cul-de-sac where Simpkins lived and remaining there for a few hours that was never traced. And it was put to the jury that this could well have been the killer who dug up Simpkins' gardens without his knowledge. The case was kicked out of court for lack of evidence and remains unsolved to this day. The only other update was a bright red smiley face painted outside on the garage shutter where Dolan and Simpkins had worked. His thoughts were broken into by Tammy, who entered the room with 2 slices of toast and marmite in a mug of tea. "I thought you were coming down. Have you had your shower yet?" "Oh no, you're not still doing the blog, are you?" She stopped for breath. "Which question shall I answer first, Tammy? And this is what is passing for dinner now, is it?" he snapped. "Oh, which question shall I answer first, Nathan?" She perched on the corner of the desk. "Oh, please come down. Turn the laptop off. Can't we curl up and watch something nice on Netflix tonight? And that means no true crime, of course." Nathan looked up from the screen for the first time. "Oh, yes. Netflix, that reminds me. There's that 3-part Jack the Ripper we haven't started yet. Tammy sighed and began to stroke Nathan's hair.
Oh, please stop. You're scaring me. You're getting obsessed now. You can't see it, but you are. No, no, Jack the Ripper. I want to watch that new Ricky Gervais thing. Maybe we should try and get away to the caravan for a few days. Nathan seethed. Tammy was starting to sound like Jim now.
No, no, I'm not Tammy. It's just starting to work for me. All the hours I've been putting in. Don't you see? This is what the blog is about. I have to keep the momentum going. It's not to relax with. It's research. Now is not the time for Ricky Gervais.
Yes, it is. Now is the exact time for Ricky Gervais.
Tammy's voice was rising. Tammy, if I told you something that's happened to me today, you'd never believe it. But I believe it's a sign, he said. After he'd quickly told her the events of the day, he spun round in the chair and looked fully in her face. She looked back, blankly for a few moments.
So, what exactly is that a sign of, Nathan?
Her voice was low now.
Well, of something like one of those synchronicities, a sign from the universe.
A what?
And what might the universe be showing you a sign like that for?
Nathan frowned.
Well, to carry on with the blog, to start the podcast, a sign to keep going, a sign that I'm on the right path. And so that's what you were doing when you came home and looked in the bin. You were looking for the big brown boot.
Actually, I think you had the right idea in the first place. Sling it in next door's bin.
I don't want it in ours now you've gone down some mad rabbit hole, she said.
Oh, yes. About that. Yes, that's where it starts getting a bit weird. He rattled off the last part of the story, the disappearing boots and the footprints in the flower bed.
He stopped, startled, as Tammy let out a scream. What?
Are you joking? Who's doing that?
Do you mean that someone has been going through our bins and trampling on the flower bed?
Well, I'm not really sure.
They sat for a couple of moments in silence.
Has it crossed your mind it could be the killer?
Tammy said at last.
The killer?
What killer? What are you talking about?
Nathan said, getting annoyed with all the questions. The killer! The killer of this Lewis Dolan! He knows you're looking into it, and now he's doing some copycat thing?
What the hell are you going on about, Tammy? How could he know? Replied Nathan.
Because of the blog! Tammy shouted.
I haven't written a blog about Lewis Dolan. I only glanced at the case a few weeks ago, I told you, as I thought it might be linked to another case.
What?
Tammy shouted again.
A case about a kidnapper with a shoe fetish and... Not what case? I mean, what the hell? You have actually looked this case up and then all this has happened.
What if...
She paused and Nathan turned back to look at her, the sick feeling returning. What if the killer has found out and is, well... replaying the crime to make you stop. Isn't it possible that people can do that hacking thing? Hacked into your computer, saw what you were looking at and started looking back at you.
Nathan said nothing but wondered at Tammy's remark, an echo of Jim's Abyss quote.
Tammy slammed out of the room after Nathan stopped talking. He turned back to the laptop and clicked around the case file site for a few moments. Before suddenly stopping. Could it happen? Could someone be hacking into his computer?
Something sinister is going on. The boots that disappeared. The flower beds.
Jumping up, he ran down the stairs. All the lights were off. Tammy must have gone to bed. Pulling open the front door, he made his way round to the flower bed and lit it up by the light of his phone once more. And it was as he expected. The footprints were not there. The flowers were still drooping after having been trampled on, but the footprints themselves were gone, replaced by sweeping marks, as though someone had covered them up. Standing looking at the flower beds, Nathan was suddenly aware of a vehicle moving very slowly down his street. Turning, he saw the vehicle that was making the noise come into view, a small van with its headlights turned off. It slowed, almost to a standstill outside Nathan's house, and then screeched off at full speed as Nathan stood, rooted to the spot. He joined Tammy in bed, not daring to type another word. How could he? Was his every keystroke being monitored? It was unbelievable. Should he tell Tammy about the van matching the description of the one caught on the neighbour's camera at the burial site of Lewis Dolan? He needed to calm his thoughts. He was the expert. He was the blogger. It was him who was starting the podcast. So yes, these undetected killers should be shaking in their boots at the thought of him on their trail. And yet, here he was, shaking in his boots, at the sight of boots. But it was so weird that both Jim Razzle and Tammy had said the same thing. That maybe the killer was honing in on him. Maybe, in his state, it was they who were seeing clearer. Dropping off as light was appearing through his bedroom curtains, Nathan had spent a fearful, fitful night. Thankfully, there were no boots as he ventured out, on the wall or at the roundabout. He pulled in and parked next to Jim's twin silver Volvo in the firm's car park. He saw in his wing mirror a furious-looking Jim bash through the office door and charge towards him. Nathan opened the car door, looking quizzically at Jim bearing down on him.
"You seen it? Have you seen it? I can't believe it. I'm telling you, mate, it was not like that when I got into it this morning. 100%, mate," Jim ranted.
"What? What's happening, mate? What wasn't like what?" Nathan asked, his heart sinking.
"This. Ain't you seen it?"
Jim was pointing at the back of his car. Nathan walked around to the back of Jim's Volvo, and there on the silver, painted in red spray paint, was a grinning, smiley face.
"My car was parked up the street a bit this morning, facing away from me. I approached it from behind. I am telling you, that was not on the back of the car."
Jim was shouting now. But it's the one that was painted on the garage door. The garage door where Lewis Dolan and Peter Simpkins work." Nathan spoke quickly, all strength leaving him.
"Hey? What are you on about? Who? I'm talking about this. You know who's done this, don't you?"
Jim suddenly stopped and Nathan looked at him.
"Well, someone here. Someone's done this since I've been here in the firm's car park. I got something out of the boot when I arrived, mate, and it wasn't there half an hour ago. Hold on. You ain't upset someone, have you?"
Jim quietened, his voice slightly suddenly menacing. Nathan looked up at him at the comment.
"Me? What do you mean me upset someone? What have I got to do with it?" "Well, I reckon someone mistook my car for yours. Well, that's all I could think of. Are you all right, mate? Nathan? Nathan? Nathan?"
Nathan could see Jim in the rearview mirror as he screeched out of the car park, standing still, watching him go and then turning back and crouching down to look at his vandalised car. Tammy gave a little jolt as Nathan burst back in through the front door only 50 minutes after he'd left for work.
"What are you doing?"
"What's wrong?" she said, her hand clutching her throat.
"The face. The smiley face. The face from the garage in the van. The van last night. He must have thought Jim's car was my car. He was there. He was at the firm's car park and..."
Nathan tailed off.
"Nathan, calm down. What's going on? You're scaring me. You are talking complete gibberish," Tammy said.
I think maybe you're right. And Jim, the abyss is looking. And like everyone said, Jim, he's turning into my twin. He's been mistaken for me." And
Nathan's words ran out again and he gaped with his mouth open at Tammy. "The abyss? Is this something to do with the universe signs or something else now? I'm getting a bit lost, Nate."
Tammy seemed a bit cross now. Nathan said nothing and sunk down onto the bottom stair. Tammy crouched down beside him and stroked his hair.
"You know what I think, Nate? I think you should pack a little bag, get in the car, head off down to the caravan for a few days. I think you should leave your laptop behind, give yourself a complete break, have a rest, get a bit of a change of scene."
"That's not going to cut it, Tam. I think you might be right." Nathan stopped.
"About what?" she said.
"The killer. The killer of Lewis Dolan. The real killer who tried to frame Peter Simpkins. I think he could be coming after me next."
He stopped and looked into her eyes, hoping to see understanding, realisation.
"We could be in danger,"
Tammy screamed.
"Quickly, pack that
bag and get down to the caravan. Like I said, leave your laptop in case the killer is spying on it. Also, leave your phone to take mine. I'll have yours, just in case it's being tracked or whatever. Drive like hell. Stop at that little shop near the campsite, and when you get there, stay inside for a few days, a week even. I will get a little burner phone from Asda and call you as soon as I can. She'd hardly finished the last sentence before Nathan was upstairs, throwing a toothbrush and a few pairs of pants into a carrier bag. He tore back down, roughly kissed Tammy on the cheek and grabbed the phone she was holding out to him, slammed the door, tore off in his car, heading some 65 miles north to their caravan. It was only about half an hour into the journey, it struck him how calm Tammy had been. How well she'd been able to think on her feet like that. She really was quite special. Maybe it was time to step away from the blog and spend more time with her. As soon as Nathan had reached the corner of the street, Tammy climbed the stairs and sat down at Nathan's laptop and deleted the history, the blog, the notes that Nathan had been making for the podcast. She ran herself a bath and, after luxuriating it for a while and washing her hair, she got out and wrapped a large towel around herself and, just for fun, fetched the laptop and placed it in the still hot bath. She dried her hair and put on a new dress. Outside, around 5:30, a silver Volvo pulled up to the house and a man in glasses and a leather jacket walked up the path. He raised a hand as a neighbour called out, "Hi, Nate," and was greeted at the door by the lovely Tammy. "Hello, darling. How's it been here?" Jim Razzle took Tammy in his arms and kissed her long and hard. "Oh, I thought it would never end. But actually, it went like clockwork. Come and sit down. Let's get a takeaway. Open a bottle of red. We've got a long night ahead of us." Tammy and Jim spent a pleasant evening sorting through the deeds to the house. Placing a couple of photos of themselves around the house, they did have a laugh at Jim in his glasses looking so much like Nathan's twin. Then they made a start on the packing. The phone rang a few times, but they just ignored it. It was to be expected. In the end, it hadn't really taken that much planning. Nathan had practically handed them the solution. After they decided he had to go, Tammy took the first step and just logged back on a couple of weeks before after Nathan had staggered into the bedroom at 2 a.m. after being up all night going down a ridiculous rabbit hole of a kidnapper who collected women's shoes. Clicking around in the history, Tammy stumbled upon an unsolved mystery of a man named Lewis Dolan. By lunchtime the next day, Jim Razzle was the owner of a pair of big brown boots and a tin of red paint. And even though she was nervous, she cracked a smile as Jim ran round to the front of the house and stood in the flower bed and pulled a funny face at her through the window. Thankfully, the rain had held off and the footprints had remained long enough for Nathan to see them and for her to quickly nip out and brush them away after Nathan had run upstairs terrified. Jim had only taken a few moments to paint the smile on the back of his car, nice and early, so he can beat Nathan to the firm's car park. And then as he had a bit of a wait for Tammy's all-clear signal, after Nathan had fled, he took a little drive to the garage he'd organised to respray the car, on the same day he'd graffitied it, just to make sure that smiley face wasn't spotted outside Tammy and Nathan's house. There had been a couple of expenses, the Volvo being the big one, but in the end that was no biggie, as the guy they sold Nathan's car to lived pretty close to the caravan, and after he transferred the money and received the documents and spare key by courier, he was ready to do battle with the bloke he was warned about. Tammy had tearfully explained that she'd loaned the car to a cousin with an anger problem who was refusing to give it back, so apologised in advance if someone should burst out of the caravan or give chase to say the car was his. With the house sold through a quick sale site and Jim having put all his stuff into storage earlier in the week, it only took a couple of days for Tammy to pack up the few bits and pieces before they made their way down to Kent to catch the overnight ferry. Tammy went up on deck as Jim, now getting used to the idea of being called Nathan to match all his new documents, fished around in the suitcases to retrieve a little surprise for Tammy. As sitting on the passenger seat, he looked out to sea as England began to shrink and pulled on his new pair of big brown boots. Big Brown Boot was written and narrated by Emma Sheehan. Show, and I hope you'll join me again on the first Monday of each month or at ordinarypeoplestheatre.brassprout.com. Thanks for listening.